If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is one half of the Game Dev Unchained podcast team, and you know I can't do it alone, but thank you very much for coming out to listen to us. I had to bring back the three-time T-Ball Home Run Derby champion, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Fresh off my tournament tour. This is Brandon Pham. Bring our special guest this month, or week, this week, Drew Smith.
Drew?
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, Drew?
You know, I'm a little upset because I was the two-time T-ball home run champion, and I didn't know Brandon had three. So Brandon,
yeah, I was right behind you. I was eyeing that. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We know you're a very busy man, and stopping by to talk to us.
Of course.
Guys, at the bottom of the totem pole is always nice.
Come on now.
Well, you know, why don't you introduce yourself, go over your resume, let our audience know how cool you are. And what you've been up to.
Wait, do you want my resume or how cool I am? Those are different
things. Whatever works, whatever's best.
So yeah, my name is Drew, as Brandon said. You know, I've been working in games for a hot minute now. I started in 2006. I worked at Take-Two for a while. And when I started, I worked in channel marketing, which is like retail marketing. That means I was with Rockstar and 2K. On everything they did. I think the first game I was ever involved in was NBA 2K6.
Oh, nice.
They had Shaq on the cover. I once ran into Shaq's back. I don't think he noticed that I hit him, but I almost fell over. And then I stayed there for 4 years, then moved to 2K, where I met Brandon. And I was a publishing producer at first. And then I switched to dev production. Then I left 2K and went to Bungie. And I worked as the multiplayer producer on Destiny. After we shipped Destiny, I left. Took a couple months, worked on a VR project, and then came to Google Play to work in the mobile industry for a bit. So that's where I am now. And I'm doing business development now, so I switched out of production.
Nice. But you've been on both sides, as he said. He's the production side and also the development side. So which side of production do you feel like was a better home for you?
I think dev production was a better home for me. And I mean, you know, at this point I've seriously, like, it's kind of crazy even to me that I, you know, had the opportunity, I think, to work in like the business side, right. To work on the channel marketing side. And that's kind of sales, even though I wasn't doing sales, and then to work on the business development side, but then also do the production stuff. It's publishing and development, all that stuff's pretty amazing opportunities.
Yeah, seriously. And you're on the right podcast to especially represent production, because we've been having this like B-arc since we started this series about, are producers valid? Are producers not valid? Are they relevant? Do they add or do they take away from, you know, actual development? And I hate to even say actual development, because even that sounds insulting.
That hurts, man. That hurts.
So, hey, man, all I know is like I've met producers that hate producers. So
So tell it like it is. As a producer yourself, where do you feel like production stands as far as a necessity or not in the game industry?
You know, I actually think it really depends on the team and the studio itself or the team. Some teams can self-organize pretty well. And I think honestly, like if there's no producer on a team, someone kind of ends up driving that anyway. They may not call themselves a producer and it may not be their only role. But you know, the producer evolved out of out of the engineering or design departments back in the early days of game development, because someone had to like project manage. Yeah. Right? Someone had to say like, "Hey, we gotta eventually get this shit done." Hey, we didn't talk about swearing. Is that okay?
No, go ahead.
Swearing's fucking okay.
Fuck yeah.
As long as we put that little E sticker on the podcast logo, everything is fine.
Wait, yeah. You mean E for everyone? I feel like that's not the right sticker.
No, it's like red E for explicit, but you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think, I mean, I think it just depends on the team, really. There are teams that can really self-organize well. I mean, you know, this is, I would say, debatable, or people could debate this, but like, you know, Valve, they don't really make games anymore, but when they were making games, they seem to put stuff together. They seem to put stuff together, and they never had producers, official producers. Yeah. Sucker Punch doesn't have producers. Naughty Dog doesn't have producers. It just depends on the team and how good. I think it's a combination of like the soft skills of a producer, mm-hmm. which is someone that can come in and make the team believe in them and themselves. And then the hard skills of like looking and like being able to budget, map things out time wise, etc.
Yeah, that's fair. I do like that, you know, you're saying that, hey, you know, we didn't come here on our own. You guys invited us because it evolved out of necessity to have producers. So that's actually a very, very fair statement and valid point on the side of game developers need producers. So before we go down the menu.
Well, hold on. But I would say there are some developers that probably don't.
No, that's fine. I was going to segue into this awesome topic for the week. So we brought you here because we're really interested in your biz dev expertise and also your game development expertise. Yeah. But the title for this week's episode is The Art of Staying in the Games Business. You know, there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, I'm going to quit. I'm going to start my own thing. Me and my buddy, we're legit. We're going to make games. And then a year, 2 years later, they still haven't released anything, or they try and fail. So we were hoping that we could pull from you a couple of examples of like great moves as small developers or big developers who aim to stay in the video game development business.
And when you say that, you're thinking came out of companies. Is that how you think about it?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I told you there was a bad area.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm all up in it right now. So the terms of people that have left like AAA companies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's the big exodus that we see the most.
First thing, I think that like indie game development in general is hard. And I know that sounds obvious, but so obvious because...
Sorry, you know, the last 5 minutes just zoned out. Just kidding. Your bright jacket's too loud.
Listen, it's super loud. People are giving me space on the sidewalk. It's nice.
Yeah, you're sounding fine now. Yeah.
It was just okay. Okay. Yeah, it's like one block.
Yeah.
And I'm almost home, which is
good. Oh, nice.
I think like, you know, people view like the people that are in game development, like whenever you're looking at it from the inside, right, you're working at a game developer. A lot of good friends of mine and even myself included, like you're like, man, I could do this better. I'm like, why are they making these decisions? This is stupid. Or, you know, just getting like kind of caught up in the like irritation of whatever you're working on. Mm-hmm. And then when you go out and you start working on stuff on your own, it's hard. Like it's not so easy.
Yeah.
Even with a few people, it's not politics, but there's still interpersonal stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
You really need to have a good level of trust and communication between the team for it to work. So if I look at like people that I know, and I'm sure I'm not going to name some people, and if they hear this, they're probably going to be mad at me. But like there's a studio called Nilo, Bungie, and... it's a few guys, but Niles, who's the main, like the principal, he and his cousin and my friend Eric, they worked on a game called Assemblance for PS4. Mm-hmm. And they did a good job. Like they kept it small. They kept their team small. They had an idea. You know, they got really inspired, I think, by PT and some other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, they brought that experience, an experience like that, not the same as PT, but to, you know, PS4 and did a good job of it. You know, they captured an audience and had so many alternate endings and alternate like that it got the audience excited. Another group, also guys that came out of Bungie, is this team called Polyarch. Polyarch's in Seattle. They haven't released anything yet. They're working on VR stuff, but they are like, look that up if you want. They know what they're doing. Like Tam, who's the CEO, is like one of the most incredible like gifted business guys I've seen. I mean, he's an engineer. That's him. He was an engineer at Bungie. But he has that transition. Like, he just understands it. He's very level-headed and he's very smart. And then the design team, which is Danny, Art, which is Chris Alderson, and then Brandon and some other, Rich Vico. There's like some other guys in there, like art and engineering, and guys and women, to be honest. All good. Like, they've done a good job of like slowly building up, working on their ideas, working on their pitch, and like building it out. I think it's impressive. So those are a couple studios that I can pick up quickly.
So what do you think is the biggest pitfall that you see a small company doing wrong when it comes to biz development? I'm sure a lot of companies try to reach out to you like, hey, you know, can we connect or can we do this or can we do that? And like, what's the biggest thing that you would say small companies have done wrong in the game industry?
That's a good question. It's a tough question. You know, in terms of biz development, biz specifically, right?
Yes.
I think one thing, you like, blanket emailing doesn't work so well. God, that's like, you might have to give me a sec just to think about this.
No worries. I'll fill in. So blanket emailing as in like writing one email and sending it to 500 different companies where you can tell that your name has just been copy pasted in.
Yeah. Wait, have you experienced this before? Yeah. LinkedIn.
Oh, scratch that off my list.
Yeah. Well, I mean like LinkedIn, right? Because like that happens on LinkedIn a lot. I get a lot of like emails on LinkedIn. I have for years. Mm-hmm. One, I don't check LinkedIn very often. So yeah. I think, Brandon, you might have reached out to me again on LinkedIn. And like 2 months later, I'm like, oh, God. Oh, shit. I would have responded a long time ago.
Honestly, I never go to LinkedIn unless I need something. So it's a great idea, obviously, right? That's why, is it Microsoft that bought it?
Yeah.
Microsoft that bought it for a good reason. I mean, it is the site for business. Mm-hmm. People to get in touch with each other, but it's just completely spam at a certain point. There's no other incentive for me to go on. Yep. And and there was a period where people were using it for like social updates of their life. You know what I mean? Then it's like, dude, this is not Facebook.
Yeah.
So it's professional. Birthday stuff. And I, this other day I saw this HR lady was like, oh, which picture should I use for my profile? I'm like, oh my God. This is terrible. This is like professionals, right?
Yeah.
So
dude, I have a picture. The picture that I have on LinkedIn is of me. Actually, I'm gonna go off on a really slight tangent here. It's of me at the NBA draft party in 2009 in Tribeca. And that night, Carmelo Anthony's mom pointed at me and she's like, Steve Nash? I'm like, I'm not Steve. but I walked away and I was like, you know what? That's never going to happen to anybody else.
You know what? I am fucking Steve Nash.
Yeah. Everyone's like, why didn't you just tell her you're Steve Nash? I'm like, because I don't know. I'm not going to impersonate Steve Nash. I'm like, I don't know what he does.
And then Carmelo comes over. This ain't Steve Nash.
I'm like, no, he's not Steve Nash.
Yeah. Mama, stop.
But I think like kind of the ironic thing about all this is actually – I got my job in games through LinkedIn. I got a job through LinkedIn in 2005. Like that's when I started in 6, but I started interviewing in 5. Mm-hmm. So don't use LinkedIn. It worked for me.
You say a good thing is blanket emailing. That specifically don't do.
It just doesn't like the amount of noise that everyone gets, like even like the non-target person, meaning like someone who's not getting emails from random people or things like that, is just huge, right? Just think about like your inbox on a daily basis, plus your like Facebook, plus your just whatever social media you're using. Mm-hmm. Anything that's not targeted and smart is going to be, it's going to be hard to get through. I found that, so if you're looking at like a startup, like business, right? Like a game company. And specifically, if you're thinking about people that are coming out of game, like jobs already, they've already worked as developed, like designers, artists, whatever, you know, producers, execs, doesn't matter. They already know people, like use those people, like talk to those people. Mm-hmm. Some people won't help you. Like that's for sure. But the people that you know and the people that you know can connect you. Like, you definitely know someone who knows someone else if you don't know them directly.
Yeah.
That's how you got to do it. Like, you just going out is hard. The other thing you can do, I'm answering the opposite, by the way. Definitely what not to do. I'm like, here's what you should do. You know, like, being at events, being present and talking to people is also a good way. Mm-hmm. But don't overdo it. I guess this is almost like a dating tip too. Mm-hmm. It's like leave them wanting something. Get out of there. Like, once you make a good impression on someone, stop talking to them.
Yeah.
Get information and move on, and then you can continue the conversation. It depends on your goal, right? Depends on what you're looking to get.
Yeah, that's like the George Costanza move where he makes a good joke and then he leaves the room.
Doesn't come back.
Leave on a high note. Right. I mean, it is a lot. I mean, dating is mostly about like social interaction, right? So it works a very much the same way in business interaction. You just want people to like you in a way to want to follow up with you.
Yeah.
And nothing's more annoying than someone pestering you about contacts.
Yeah.
Man, even when I was getting there, like going for the job at Take-Two way back then, I called the recruiter like once a week. I didn't call him more than that. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I wanted to call that guy like every hour.
Yeah. What are you eating? Once a week, right? Yeah.
What's that?
What are you watching right now? What are you eating?
I'm eating. Oh, yeah. Like, hey, what are you doing? You're home, you're hanging out, you know, maybe. Yeah, no, it like consistently you have, or I wanted to consistently call, but I just made it a regular thing whenever it was on Monday. Mm-hmm. I'll call them. And I think like the same kind of persistent but not annoying approach, right, is really the way to go. Now, Larry kind of said that a second ago, so.
Yeah. Look, courtship in dating, courtship in business, just take out the context and just say courtship, right? Like, it's important to know how to do it with finesse. And it's like, honestly, it's gotten me so far in life in both categories. But there were some bumps where I had to learn how to do it, you know? So, yeah, I agree. Yep. You got to show some thigh first, and then that's it. You know, that's,
you can't. Just for everyone listening right now, don't show any thigh. That's not going to help you.
Oh, shit. All right. Metaphorically. Well, I mean, one of the biggest things, well, generally speaking, if you say business development, you kind of have an idea, but I have no idea specifically what's going to happen when I go into business development. Like, how do you even get that job? What do you do to perform that job well? Like, who do you usually talk to? Who do you report to? Who do you now really serve? Let's say to that blanket audience out there who has no idea what you do, can you kind of explain what you do?
wait, is this like one of the Bob interviews? Are we doing that right now? What is it say you do here?
Drew just ran out the room right now.
I'm a people person. I connect people.
Exactly.
Talk to the engineers. Honestly, a lot like production, business development's different at different places. I think a lot of it, the general piece pretty much across any business development role is being well connected, like having the connections to other people, because that's primarily what you're doing. You're developing business. I know it sounds stupid. Like, yeah, of course it's in the name, but legitimately you're making the connections that need to happen with whoever that is. So, for me specifically, I work with a lot of different AAA game developers, meaning game developers that have traditionally made games in console PC, because that's where I come from, right? I already know those guys. I know what they are making. I know their games. Even if I didn't know the mobile ones specifically at first, I've been here for a little bit, but when I first moved in, I certainly know what EA is making in their core business. I certainly know what Activision or Blizzard or Bungie or whomever is making and what their core business is. I'm like very familiar with it. So one of the primary thing I would say for all business development roles is having the the old school idea of a Rolodex of people that you know that you can link up that makes sense and you have those relationships with people. Where it changes like where it varies depending on what company it is and what you're doing is some companies, business development is heavily a like deal making job, which means you're working with whomever, that doesn't really matter, to set deals. So that could be publishing deals. So you could be out, like, let's just use fictional developer, publisher A. Publisher A, Electronic Arts, Activision, Take-Two, doesn't matter. They will have some business development people, and those business development people will be looking for games to sign and publish under their label. Right? So it's not owned IP, it's something outside. And once they find it, then they're working with the lawyers and they're doing contract negotiation. They're negotiating the business terms. And the lawyers traditionally are writing up the contracts to reflect that stuff. And it's a back and forth process, and it can be simple or complicated. You know, it can be a big money or small money. None of those things really matter. It's just the negotiation part. So I think that's that's one segment of it. And of course, none of this stuff is mutually exclusive, right? You can
sure, yeah.
handle all this stuff. But the other thing is really like relationship management. So in again, to use my current case, like, you know, I do a lot of relationship management. I work with the publishers and developers and help make them aware of stuff we're doing internally and, you know, want to help them succeed, basically. Right? It's obviously beneficial for everybody. So yeah, there's a couple of variations of that, but.
So let me ask you this then. I'm assuming because you're in this role where you're doing relationship management, there are times where you're on the receiving end of a request, and then there's times where you're the person making the request. I guess, how do you kind of handle that line as far as like when people are coming to you and like, hey, this is the first time I'm meeting you, but I want you to do me a favor, right? Like, obviously, I'm assuming that's very off-putting. You know, is there a successful way to kind of, I guess, introduce or like request that two companies or two entities kind of form a relationship?
Well, I think that, you know, if it's like, let's make up somebody, let's call this guy Steve. Let's say Steve lives in his basement. Not Steve Nash. That's a different Steve.
Dude, Steve sucks, by the way. I hate Steve.
Wait, like, Steve's got his own like basement company. If the random person X is coming to you and there's no like context or anything, that's going to be a harder sell. Right. Mm-hmm. Just meaning like any individual person has a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. You have to like choose where you're spending. I always call them coins, but like choose where you're spending your coins, your time. And I think the easiest way for it to happen is it's not necessarily frustrating. I mean, I as a person, I don't like to leave people kind of in the lurch, right? Like I don't like leaving people out there and not answering them. But there are times when I have to do it because it can't be a priority for me. And, you know, I have to focus on the main priorities and focus on my time and like have a life, et cetera, like all these things. So I think that usually if someone's coming to me, if they're from, you know, a reputable establishment, whatever that is, that's usually helpful, right? Like if I don't know what this should be, I'm trying to think of something outside of just a game developer.
Sure.
Like, let's say like, you know, a game engine or someone came to me and wanted to talk or something like that, or like a prominent maybe indie developer or, you know, something I know or I've seen, even smaller ones, like I'll probably at least look at it. It's just a matter of, you know, there's some other external factors going on,
gotcha.
Which are like how busy things are at the time, hashtag GDC.
Yeah.
During that time, as you guys well know,
yeah.
I don't have a lot of time, but other times, you know, it's a little more flexible.
And so GDC obviously is probably the cesspool of where that type of behavior is happening the most. You know what I mean? Well, I guess, are there any like maybe one or two tips that you would have that will say this can help you successfully navigate the biz dev waters in a GDC?
Yeah. There's a couple things I'll say that I've learned over time.
Okay.
Number one is manage your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't overload yourself with stuff because you're only going to suffer. And it just sounds really basic and really dumb, but I'm telling you right now, time and time again, I see this. Like, I mean, like one of my first years at GDC, not as a developer in biz dev, I didn't even schedule lunch. I didn't eat for 10 hours. And like, and then I flew a red eye to PAX, like in PAX East, like on like a Thursday during GDC. It wasn't a good scene. So like stepping back, And like managing that is a huge piece. If you're trying to like link with people, I personally don't like parties. Mm-hmm. The mixers are a little better because they're quieter and you can actually talk to people. Mm-hmm. But the parties, like maybe I'm an old man now, I don't know, but it's just not that exciting. Like, you know, hey, internet, don't, you know, you can invite me to your parties, but like at the end of the day, like I may or may not come. I probably show up for 30 minutes and strategically talk to three people and get the F out. Mm-hmm. But mixers I might go to. Yeah. And maybe bars, but you know, it's like a GDC, like the W bar is packed.
Yeah.
You guys know this.
Yeah.
I just heard it with your voice.
What I didn't know is that these parties are recruiting events. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't, what? I just go to these parties for the food and free booze. And the HR people would just come at me, like trying to recruit me. I was like, what are you doing? Oh, it's a recruitment event. Oh, okay. And I just hang by the food the whole time. So I'm not really there to conversate, which is perfect.
You have till the end of this beer to convince me why I should stay for more beer.
Yeah. It's like, what kind of sliders do you have? Or not for the other event. Yeah, so I get you, man. I mean, when you go to those things, you can't really talk. The music's too loud. Everyone's like trying to get jobs or trying to make connections or forcing connections. And it's a weird type of vibe, but if you're there just for the food and booze, it's a party, man.
I honestly think the bars are a little better because they're more free flowing.
Yeah.
And the other thing, like another thing, this is definitely a problem that I have. I'm not really drinking right now, which is great, and I didn't really drink during GDC. But even if I don't drink, I tend to lose my voice in one of those places because it's just so much talking and it's so loud. I'm relatively like introverted, meaning I need to be home to like get energy. I do a lot of walking with headphones on.
Yeah.
I get real tired at the end of the day. Like I'm like, by the time we get to dinner, I mean, there were two dinners last week where I was with friends and I almost fell asleep. Mm. And I'm like, man, these guys are going to think I'm tired of them. I'm not. I need a minute. But I think the bar scene, which is a weird thing, to just like thinking about, like, but I think the bar scene is a better place to go by and large, or the mixers, because you can start talking to people and people are there to talk. There are recruiting events, like Brandon said, right? Like Epic has one every year. I mean, there's just so many.
There's a lot. Yeah.
Riot usually has one, but like, you know, that's probably not the best place for BP. That's why I think you need to go to those other locations.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So Brandon, let me just ask you a quick question. Did you happen to plan which parties you went to by the course in your meal? Like, all right, so these guys are going to have a dessert. I'm going to go here for entree.
You go for the biggest companies because obviously they have the best food.
So who had the best catering, Brandon, at this year's
GDC? Amazon was pretty good, man.
Okay.
Right, I was disappointed. They didn't have any food.
And you got to step your game up.
It was
guys.
Just booze, and then promises of great jobs. Sure, all right. We have an awesome buffet at our place. It's like, well, you don't have it here.
Right,
you don't got anything here.
Yeah, that's. Listen, I've been to Riot.
Yeah,
another buffet.
Yeah,
it's another great, but I feel I. And you're spot on. I would have said the same thing. Well, that shit isn't here. So I don't know who you're trying to impress by telling me that.
Yeah.
I got a really cool car, but right here is a Prius. You want to jump in a Prius? That's awesome. But I have a 911 Turbo at home.
Yeah, exactly.
No good.
But yeah, I mean, it's.
Here, let's try it in this Prius, though, and it'll give you an idea of the 911.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
No.
Exactly. Oh, man, that's a good one.
But yeah, I imagine it must be hell for biz dev guys like he is at those things because it is a limited amount of time. It's like 3 days, and it gets filled up pretty quickly. Just if you have any time to meet old friends, you know, you don't want to just be there on business the whole time.
I think another like just a success, like life success tip that's taken me time to get to. Like some people get here really early. It took me longer. And I talked about schedule before, like managing your schedule, but honestly, like that doesn't just apply to GDC. Mm-hmm. That applies to every week, right? That applies to, how you run your life and just overall. And when I think about you know, my weeks, right? So, you know, I split my time between the office in Mountain View and the office in San Francisco. And Fridays, I have no meeting Fridays. Like if people try to schedule meetings with me on Friday, I'm like, unless there are very, very few exceptions to this, but it's basically sacred. It's like, no, we can do it on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, but Friday's off because I need a day to do work. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everyone has to have no meeting Fridays. That's not necessarily the answer, but you need to figure out what that is for you. Just as a general practice, because we all have stuff to get done. And if you don't manage your own schedule, you're going to be more successful by limiting things and being more focused than by being too broad and doing too much. And I think that applies to all this stuff, right?
It does. I should change the title of this episode to from being like success in biz dev to just success.
I think it's broader. I think we should just call it life.
Life.
Life. Life without games. There we go.
No, that's not a life I want to
live. So let me ask you this, right? So I always see the future of game development being taken over by companies outside of game development. So like what's happening right now, there's like this emerging market with Google, Facebook, Silicon Valley companies kind of putting their, you know, coin in or putting their own spin on trying to make the game business a little bit more sustainable. Mm-hmm. So we talk about AAA guys, you know, reaching a boiling point of making the best graphics, you know, putting a lot more money in, making the team bigger. But on the side here, the mobile market is blowing up. We got the VR market blowing up. We got Google coming in with their Daydream and their Google Play stuff. A lot more options. Like, how do you see all this coming together? Like, do you see kind of like everyone converging at some point? Because there are a lot of different directions where we can go from just analyzing everything right now.
Yeah. I've got an answer and I'm excited about this answer. I'm flying to Boston in the morning, right? So I just turned around and I unplugged my my Switch because I was like, oh, I gotta get this thing ready. You know how like dumb shit, like you look around your room and you see something, you're like, oh, I need to do that real quick.
Yeah, it's all good. It just sounded like you were like in the bathroom with the door open.
Way out.
You don't know anything else about me. Be in the bathroom. That's usually where I get most of my work done. No one can bother you when you're in there.
Yeah, that's true.
So here's like, I think this is a super interesting question. And, you know, I spend a lot of time looking at it and I spend a lot of time talking about it and coming to the, you know, into the mobile game business and spending time here and having my own preconceived notions about what mobile games are, seeing what mobile games are in general, right? And, you know, knowing where I come from in the console PC world and what I love and what I grew up on, right? I mean, I started playing games at Atari 2600. I mean, I was a little kid.
Oh, man, yeah.
But it's been a long time. And, you know, through Nintendo, through Genesis, through just all the way up, right, to the current console generation. And one thing that is happening is that all three of the markets, console, PC, and mobile are growing. Mobile is growing faster, but that's obvious. Like, it's like, of course it's growing faster, right? There's a zero cost to entry for people. So people will download games. And then also as you expand throughout the world, it's easier to access that, right? To have a console is more difficult because you have to buy a console, you have to have a television, you have to have a place to have all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's prohibitively expensive. Mobile phones are also expensive. So it's not to say they're not, but there is a way to get cheaper mobile phones and then you can get games on them. Now the second piece is about the games themselves. So there's a fundamental difference in the standard games that are on the mobile platform versus the games that are on consoles and PCs overall, right? We're not talking about individual games here, just in general. And I kind of define this, and there was an internal conversation about this once, but I define these two groups as time passers and time spenders. And time passers are the people that play mobile games. And what I mean by that, there's no like negative connotation to either one of these comments. It's just someone who's a time passer is on their phone playing a game to pass time.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it because they're in line, they're in a bathroom, they're traveling, right? They're on a train, whatever it is, wherever they might be. And they may play it for an hour. That's possible, right? They may do that, but they don't necessarily sit down with the intent to do that. I can't say that everyone doesn't sit down with the intent to do that, but generally you're sitting down, you want a relatively fast experience. You want to play 3 minutes of Clash Royale. You want to play, you know, Candy Crush or Need for Speed or whatever it is, right? You just want to get in there for a few minutes and play a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is not like very taxing on you, right? You know, it doesn't require huge amounts of skill investment or things like that. I'm not saying there's no skill. I'm just saying that it doesn't involve the same. Yeah. Now, the person who's playing on their television or their PC, they're choosing to spend time. Like their thought is like, if I sit down, I'm playing Dark Souls, Prepare to Die on PC, like not right this minute, but because that would be really hard. But you know, like during this time of my life, I've gone back and started playing this game. And when I turn my PC on to play that, like I don't know how long I'm going to play, but in my mind, I'm like, I probably have a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going to beat Smough and Ornstein, right? I'm going to go beat this boss. I'm going to go do this thing. I'm going to play for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is, or I'm going to stop at this time. And that's a very different experience. And the experience that I expect out of that is extremely different from the experience I would expect out of the same amount of time or just the game type on a mobile device in general, right? So I think when I don't see the worlds converging in the way that like all games become one type of thing, because I just think there's two, I mean, there's multiple subclasses of this, right? Because we look at Dota or League, which are free to play games, but they monetize very well, but they're completely skill based games, right? They're very complicated, very in depth skill based games. But I think that there's going to be a group and continue to be a group of people that want that kind of experience, whether it's the esports PvP game like Dota League, Counter-Strike, StarCraft, whatever it might be. There's going to be the people that want the Dark Souls isn't necessarily single player, but you know, the story driven or the intense, like really hardcore kind of game that requires a lot of patience and skill and learning. There's going to be people that want to play The Last of Us or, you know, Uncharted and some story driven thing.
Yeah.
Hey man, I'm a huge fan of it. That's a whole other podcast we could do. But all that stuff, right? And then there's just everything in between, Overwatch, you know, Team Fortress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can go on for a long time. There's a lot of different like segments within that time spenders category. Time passers, there are still segments there because I think there are more core games, which are like the Clash Royales. And then there are more casual games, which are like the Candy Crush. And again, it's not to say that one can't cross over to the other or that, that a core, you know, console PC gamer never plays mobile games. None of those things. They're not mutually exclusive things. It's just what the person's choosing to do with their time and how they're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the choice they're making. So I think long-term, we're going to have two relatively distinct, at least for now, right? At least in the foreseeable future, two distinct categories of gamers.
Okay.
That's my feeling. Now I don't know how that combines in the, on the platform level. That I'm not sure of.
I was just going to ask you if you had to place a bet on this one idea of consoles being around or not, I guess, where would you put your money? Do you think consoles are going to survive or do you think consoles are going to die out?
I think it's less about the consoles and more about the games.
Ooh, okay.
I think the games survive. I don't know about the consoles. Like I'm not sure, right? I think it's a good question. But the games will survive because there's a clear, as I said, like all these markets are growing. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're not growing. Like I said, there's a huge delta between how fast, it's like a 6x delta between how fast mobile is growing over a console PC, but it's still important to know that they're all growing, which means the overall pie is getting bigger, which also means that the console PC market, more people are spending money on $60 games.
Mm-hmm.
And people are willing to do it. So yeah, I think it's about the game. I don't know the games themselves. I don't know how that, like, if that model changes ever, it may, who knows. But right now I see it staying pretty steady.
Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah, I mean, my thing is, like, you know, obviously we grew up on consoles, right? So the mobile is really new to us, especially to me. I feel so dumb when I go on a train and I see these kids playing games on their phone I've never even heard of. Like, I feel really old just seeing these kids play these games on their mobile phones and just not having any idea, never heard of it. I'm not as versatile as I thought, but I'm in the industry. I'm constantly studying techniques to get better. I'm constantly checking my my blogs to keep up to date to what games are hot. Obviously, I know the Clash of Clans. I know the Candy Crush, the very popular ones, but there's a lot of littler ones that I have I don't keep up with. So I feel like I'm already going in a direction. And like you said, like, there's going to be two paths, two different types of gamers. I already see that divide of what kind of developer I'm going to be for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I'm just laughing because I'm sure, Larry, did you hear him struggling when he's like, I feel dumb. Like, he was going to...
He's having the realization.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone, I don't think anyone else gets to watch you guys, but I get to see the expression this time.
Like, yeah, we stopped doing the live streaming. We just record now.
We should bring it back.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Let me try to think of it a different way. Put it in different perspective. So the mobile game world, it's a super low barrier to entry, right? Like, it takes, all you have to have is a phone.
Yeah.
And then you can play. So you're going to see a lot of people playing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, there's also, because there's a low barrier to entry, I mean, it's hyper competitive to be successful, of course.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I don't think you're not out of touch and you're not out of the loop at all. As we, like you said, like, if you think back, right, let's think back to like 2000, right? Right when the PS2 launched, I think in 2000, might have been 2001, but I think it's 2000. If we think back to that time, or maybe even, let's go to the generation before, let's go PlayStation and, like, you know, Nintendo 64. Man, you were nerdy. You were playing that stuff. Like, it was a small, like, relatively, right? Small group of people.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't, like, it wasn't, like, looked upon as, like, a positive thing.
Yeah. That was gamer, like, said it like that.
Video gamer.
Air quotes and shit.
Air quotes, yeah. I know, I mean, like, I worked at Electronics Boutique back then.
Yeah,
I used to, like, prank call an EBS that I could see from Electronics Boutique because we had three stores in the same mall. Not good business, by the way. I would just ask them if they had Game Box for X-Cube all the time. And, like, in a really, like, stereotypical way. And they'd be like, we don't have it. Nothing. Not really. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, like, that market's grown. And, you know, I think, like, little kids can play mobile games because there's no cost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, there may be a cost to advance, or there may be, I don't want to say hidden cost, that's not the right word, but there may be, like, other, like, costs that you can get involved in, but just the initial cost is not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of no risk, I would say, for parents, you know, like, no risk entertainment. But as people get older and they want experiences, I mean, it's not a comparable experience, I don't think, to say, like, again, like, it's not a knock on mobile games. I don't mean it that way. They're just designed for different audiences. Mm-hmm. To go back to Larry's, I'm going to say, favorite game. I'm just, you know, I don't know if this is true. The Last of Us, or a game that he likes, right? Like, there's nothing on mobile that's anywhere near that. And I pointed out, again, to some people internally, and I think when I was doing the time spender, time passer kind of definitions, I was like, look, I'm like, when I get involved in, you know, Red Dead Redemption or something like that, you know, I'm like, that game they made me cry. I'm like, that was an insane, intense game. And then I linked out to the Ashtar Command Dead Man's Gun song. I'm like, this is a song written for this game. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, this is a beautiful song, you know, and like it's filled with emotion. I'm like, and that's a very different experience. So I think in the way like we look at, you know, entertainment in general, there's just different kinds of entertainment for different things. And the, you know, maybe YouTube has really good stuff. So I can't use YouTube as an example. I don't know what the example of like mobile is in the like the visual entertainment world. But there are, you know, if we just take movies and we say there's some really thought-provoking, interesting things, and then there's some trash. you run the gamut, right?
Well, this kind of ties back to what I was asking before, like the converging market question. And you were mentioning about the Switch earlier. Do you ever kind of see, you know, these phones are getting more powerful? It is weird to have like a long form type of game on a mobile because people aren't playing mobile games for that reason. But do you see we get to that certain point where someone is making The Last of Us on the phone? It can handle it. It looks great. It won't kill your batteries. I mean, the Switch to me is kind of that testing ground of doing that. But do you see that in the long run being a thing where these AAA guys are starting like, hey, let's just make this game on the phone. And let's get these guys, this huge market, low bar of entry, no middlemen. Well, I mean, if you count iOS and Android as middleman, but not really, right? But like, I want to bring this experience to the phone. Do you see an audience there? Do you see that being a possible market, especially with Switch out now? All these adults carrying this huge iPad full of AAA games.
The first thing, by the way, is just that as you say this, all I can think is Merman, Dad. Merman. I hope someone watched Zoolander and it wasn't just me. Merman, Dad. I don't know, Brandon, I don't know if you remember, I used to write a column called Gamer Gossip a long time ago. And I don't know if you're ever on that or not. But I started writing it like 11 years ago.
Oh, wow. I'm going to say yes. I don't remember.
I'm still going to say yes. He's checking his email right now, and he says like it's like 60 unread emails or like 200 unread emails. He's like, yeah, no, I totally read that shit.
Dude, email is dead to me, man. The same way LinkedIn is dead. If I don't see it, I tried purging the other day. Sorry to go off tangent. I'll end it real quick. Like I had like 1,000 emails that I had to delete because it was really bothering me. Mm-hmm. But then 2 days later, it went back up to 1,000. I just forget it. This is my life. You know, I'm not going to delete emails anymore.
It's not out of all the problems you can have in the world, that's not that bad. Man, this is my life. 1,000 emails I haven't read. Bullshit.
That's my life now. Yeah. That's what I'm complaining nowadays.
It's not the worst thing in the world, but I get it. I lose my mind if I have a bunch of unread emails. I'm just like, it bothers me. I'm like, I should answer these people. Like that's what I said earlier. I'm like, oh God, someone emailed me. I'm like, I have to answer them. Like 2 months later, I look at the email. I'm like, it's garbage. I don't need to answer that. So let's jump to, I put it up on Medium now. I started doing it. I just started. I just had like one up there and I haven't been writing like I used to because it's time consuming. And we talked about time. It'll change. I'm getting back into it. But one of I wrote about the Switch a little while ago and it pertains to exactly what you're saying. Okay. And the thought on the Switch that I have is the mobile market doesn't have premium. Like people don't go there for premium games.
Yeah.
There's conditioning that's happened now where initially there were premium games, but at this point people are like, fuck, I ain't buying games on mobile. Like, why would I do that? In fact, I was walking with a good friend of mine in Seattle. This was 2 years ago.
Dude, you have friends? Man, wow. We are doing well as games. Oh, just kidding.
We're moving on.
Just because I have a friend doesn't mean I need to get mocked about it. I'm just, it's one guy, all right? He might or might not be imaginary. It's just
no, dude, I was just blaming it on the pink jacket. I figured as a deterrent.
I got to, you know what? Here's the deal. While I'm telling the story, someone look up Quarter Snacks coach's jacket.
Okay.
You'll see the exact jacket that I have.
Okay, I'll do it.
So anyway, so we were walking down the street and, you know, he was asking me, this again, it's like 2 years ago. He's asking me like, oh, what games should I be playing on mobile? And like, I'm the mobile guru because I'd worked in mobile for like a month. and I was like, oh man, I'm like, well, you should, have you played Monument Valley? He's like, no, I'm like, oh, I know I played that. I'm like, okay. And did you just look at the jacket?
Yeah.
That's a strong jacket, man.
It takes balls to fucking thing, but I don't care.
So you're looking for fights, huh?
Well, there's only two types that you would encounter. People who would leave you the fuck alone, or people who are like hunting for you. Yeah. So you're really taking a chance out there.
Oh, you're awesome, man. You're awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
You just gotta own it sometimes. You know what? I have the matching. There's like shoes that go with it.
Coming back from a gym? Why are you wearing that?
it's kind of got like the Quarter Snacks on the back. Kind of looks like a gym logo a little bit.
Yes, yeah, it does.
Right, yeah. Like that varsity lettering.
It's varsity. Totally.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Hold on. We're getting way off track here. But anyway, we're walking along. He's like, you know, what games? I'm like, have you played Monument Valley? He's like, yeah, I played Monument Valley. I'm like, oh, have you played Leo's Fortune? And he's like, no, I haven't played it. So he picks up his phone. He opens his phone. And I don't remember. Leo's Fortune was like $4.99 or $5.99. He's like, $5.99? And I'm like, fuck you. I'm like, $60 games. I'm like, you can't afford to spend $4.99 on a game, which is like less than the cost of a beer.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're part of the problem. I'm like, you got to understand that like you're creating this problem on the mobile market. So to go back to Switch is like addressing this.
Mm-hmm.
Switch has created something that is for time spenders. Like going back to this idea, I'm just going to keep fucking nailing this until it starts spreading out throughout the ether and people start repeating it. And then, you know, when I'm on deathbed, I'm like, oh, that was mine.
I coined it.
But someone else will take credit for it.
Maybe
you guys.
We're going to dub over your voice and say we came up with it.
You heard it first on Game Dev.
That would be amazing. I don't even know. I wouldn't even be mad.
No, I like it. That's a good term.
But like, you know, they're taking these people that want to play that way. They want to play those longer form games. They're happy to spend money on it. And they're like, hey, you can play this game wherever you want. Mm-hmm. You want to play it in a bathroom? Because honestly, anyone's got a phone, they're playing games in the bathroom. That's just moment of truth here.
Mm-hmm.
But you can play the Switch there, right? You can play it on a plane, but then you can plug it into your TV and you can play that shit on your big TV. It hits everything you want to hit, right? You can use a regular controller or you can use a little, whatever those sticks are called.
Joy-Cons.
Yeah. Joy-Cons. I guess that's, it's pretty standard, but like, I think so to jump back to your question about mobile, right. And like to go from the Switch to mobile, I think that the big problem that mobile has, again, for the Dark Souls, for the Last of Us, for these types of games, the current way those games control and play, you can't do that on a phone.
Mm-mm.
Like there's no way to emulate it. It doesn't feel good. You know, there's someone once said to me, and I think they're right. We were talking about esports and you know, the thing that makes like Dota or League or Counter-Strike or Overwatch, you know, so prolific in the esports world and so interesting to watch is that they're so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And like I play a lot of Dota, so I'm just going to use the MOBA first for example, but it could apply to any one of these. You know, those games, like I actually use those as like an analog to basketball,
mm-hmm.
specifically because it's a 5v5 game. Everyone has a position, like a role on the team, and you need to be good at that role, right?
Yeah.
And when I watch teams fail, like I'm like, it's because everyone wants to be Steph Curry. And it's like, you are not all Steph Curry. I'm like, someone needs to be
Draymond Green.
Right. Someone's gotta be Draymond. Someone's gotta get in there with the bows and do some flexing afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, whatever that is, like you gotta have those roles. And I got a little off track here. I wanted to go back to something. I apologize.
You're saying MOBA 5-on-5. You're saying the reason why it's so captivating is the difficulty and people need to respect the role.
Yeah. You have it like a skill level, like a, you know, gradient of like a 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. It's controls is what I was talking about before on a mouse and keyboard. It's so precise. Right. And mm-hmm. You know, there's a glorious PC master race that's been mocked and lauded and loved like on and off by different people. You know, I was having a conversation with a lawyer at Take Two a long time ago, sitting next to me, and he's like, "Yeah, I think console's better." I'm like, "I like you're right." I'm like, "I'm not saying that console's not good or it's not fun, but let's just have a moment here. When was the last time you overshot something on your desktop?" Mm-hmm. and he's like, he's like, "Never." I'm like, "Yeah, because you don't, because it's precise."
Yeah,
you have that, like, you have this 1 to 10 level, the skill level. Like, if you are a, I think this is a complete analogy to basketball, right? If you are a 8 or an 8.6, right, you are going to get destroyed by a 9. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you are a 9.2 playing a 9.4 or 9.5, you're going to get destroyed by that person. Mm-hmm. It allows for such a fine skill difference. And mm-hmm. I think this was a conversation I was having with someone else a little while ago, who used to be a professional gamer. Mobile right now, like it doesn't quite have that same input, and I don't think console really does either, to be honest. I think that world almost exclusively exists on PC. That's not saying that there can't be spectator things or things that people are interested in watching on mobile or other places. Like I don't mean to say that, but I like the intense skill is really honed in on one world. Mm-hmm. What was the original question?
I think you got it. Like
The Switch.
Yeah, the Switch being like kind of like the bridge to converge the market. Yeah, the hybrid.
I think it does. And like it's controls. It gives you that, like, and that's how I got off on this, because I was thinking about the controller and like either buy the pro controller or to use that little weird fucking Jimmy Jam controller that they give you.
Right, yeah.
Dog face.
Or you know. Or just to use them on the regular Joy-Cons on the side. And it's almost bizarre to me to think about, because they only have one game that I've played which is Zelda, right? That I think is like pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm like, how is this different than the like PSP? I'm like, how is this different than multiple mm-hmm. handheld consoles, like, or the handheld devices that they've had for a long time?
Yeah.
It feels different. It feels new. It feels fresh. It, like, the ability to put it up on the screen. It's not the first handheld that you could put on screen, I don't think.
No, PSP would be remote play, right?
Yeah, there was that GameCube attachment that you could plug in, and then you could play GameCube DS games or Game Boy Advance games, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, they've experimented with all this stuff before, but it just feels kind of fresh and new, and it feels like they're addressing a market that's pretty much ignored in the handheld world.
Okay.
Mobile world.
I'll say this. I'm happy that what is considered a big console is finally hybrid between handheld and console, so to speak. I'm sad that it's Nintendo doing it first, because it's going to kind of cannibalize their handheld market a lot. And I don't think Nintendo is pushing what I would consider the limits far enough with this idea. But I'm happy that somebody is putting billions of dollars in it. Well, I shouldn't say billions, but like say low $2 billion, $3 billion into an idea like this. When you consider development, manufacturing, marketing, and all that added up together.
Larry's got a direct line into Miyamoto. So
Miyamoto-san, hey, this is what I think you should do. I'm happy that it's happening, because like I might have said this a couple times on this podcast. That's one of my biggest dream come trues, was like as a kid in high school or whatever. I was like, I want my PS2 game on the TV, but then when I go to school, I want to play the same game. Yeah. And I didn't want to sacrifice fidelity and quality. Whereas when you say like Game Boy Advance doing that or GameCube, I never considered those like top level graphical experiences. I'll just say experience great. Yeah, don't get me wrong, like I had fun playing Pokemon.
Castlevanias were amazing.
Exactly. Yeah, they made great stuff, but like I really wanted like my at the time 720p or whatever in my hands and on my screen. And so I'm happy that we're at the point where we finally got it, but like I'm a 32 year old male now, you know, I don't have it like I used to. So anyway.
Getting slow in your old age.
I just don't have the life to be as excited about this idea anymore, you know, and I just feel kind of let down is what I'm trying to say. Mm. It was like 8 years ago, I would have been all over this shit. But right now I'm just like, oh, dang. Well, hey.
I mean, like, you're also like, man, I got bills.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got, like, life responsibilities.
And you would think that a hybrid console like this is exactly what you need. It's like, hey, Larry, while you're going out to do all these other things that keep you away from home, here, take the handheld version and then go back home and like play it. And like, I see the logic in it, but I don't know. I don't even know where the hell I'm going with that. I'm just venting. You guys are here helping me vent the fact that I can't enjoy the games the way that I wanted to.
Well, it's true. It is kind of like Nintendo's response to what's happening instead of the Switch is innovative respectfully, but it is an iPad with controllers on the side, right? It isn't like, it would have been awesome if they did this instead of the Wii U, right? At that time it would have been truly innovative. It would have been like no one would have been able to think of this idea. But this is kind of expected. Like, we were hoping that Nintendo would do something like this. Mm. We want them to do something like this. It's in response of how the mobile market is blowing up.
It's also in response of Nintendo wanted to sell games.
they want to stay as a business.
Yeah. Shots fired.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those, I agree. I don't think it's that innovative, but I do think it isn't innovative. But it is insofar as that you can play it in multiple places, right? It's not like a crazy out there idea, like, oh my God, my mind is blown. Like, you don't feel that way. You're like, oh yeah, no, I kind of expect this from Nintendo.
Yeah.
I think that the positive, that's not necessarily negative, but I think a positive thing is that, and something I like about Nintendo, you know, I'm not a Nintendo fanboy. But I had a Wii U. I don't think I've ever actually played the Wii U, which is, I mean, I played it before. I just don't think I've played mine. I'm pretty sure it's never been on. But I appreciate the fact that they're willing to try things and fail and then to keep coming back. I mean, Virtual Boy, right? Like, obviously the Wii U. What else did they, you know, they
GameCube wasn't that bad, but
it was a lower point.
I mean, they have these highs and lows with their consoles, but they're always trying something.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're willing to take much bigger risks than, you know, I think Microsoft and Nintendo have traditionally, Microsoft and Sony have traditionally been willing to take.
Yeah.
So here's a question. Go ahead.
I was going to say, except maybe with Sony VR. I'm looking over in my the side of my room, and I have a Rob. Oddly enough, a Nintendo Rob the Robot, like the original.
Oh man, place for Loki.
Yeah, right. And I didn't have Gyromite. You had Gyromite.
Thank you. That's
what was the other one? Stack Up or Stack? Like, I think it was Stack Up. Yeah. Something like that.
You could play Gyromite with you. I remember that.
Yeah, it was the most worthless thing ever. It was look at for a minute, and you're like, why do I have this?
Yeah, that's been Nintendo's MO for so long, right? The Power Glove, the Power Pad, like all that shit.
Hey,
all right, so I've got a really important question for you.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Before you do that,
okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to tell the world that what Rob the Robot is really good for is he's an amazing headrest for my PSVR. And in fact, I'm going to walk you over there. I'm going to remove the veil here of this white cat that you're staring at, and I'm just gonna have you and look at this quickly. I'm not gonna show you me, because that's
right.
It's gonna be this guy. Hold on, here we go.
So what he means by the white cat, ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, that's a perfect fit.
Sorry, awesome. I'm trying to center this while I'm not.
That's pretty good. Yeah
that's dope.
Yeah, what is the? I don't think you should tell him what the white cat is. I mean, she's like, it's just like a white rabbit. Like, let no one
speculate.
Yeah, what the hell is he talking about? The white cat.
It's his friend.
That's the image for this podcast.
Well, Drew, you know what? I'll do that, and then people are gonna be like, "What the f?" They're not gonna get it until they, and then we'll know who really listens to the end of the podcast.
Oh shit! Yeah.
That's right. Also, by the way. You know, you just said what the F, and now I feel as us. Am I going to get bleeped out?
No. One of us has to keep it clean.
Yeah.
So here's a very important question for you. I've been waiting all episode to ask you this question. If Brandon and I were to be quiet and give you an opportunity to talk directly to our audience, to promote or to advertise or to draw awareness to something that's very important to you, what would you use that time to talk about?
You know, there's a lot of good things to talk about for sure. And I don't, you know, if you guys are interested in following me or knowing what I think on things, I've got, this Medium blog. It's under, let me look actually. It's okay. Kitsune, KITSUNE, which is Japanese for fox. And if you go to okay, Kitsune, you can find my stuff that I'm writing. So you can find that thing on the Switch that I mentioned, and I'm going to try to be a little more frequent about it, but you're welcome to check that out on Medium. But honestly, you know, I kind of want to talk about something different because it's International Women's Day. And since yes. All the women that are supposed to be on this podcast, you know, that in protest, although I am wearing red and a pink jacket. You know, I read something today that I thought was really interesting, and it's called affinity bias. And affinity bias is that when you interview, like when you interview people, not like this, like I'm talking about for jobs or something, mm-hmm. but it was kind of interesting to me. You know, you tend to relate better to people that had similar experiences to yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? And if we look at like, you know, women not being as represented in games or not holding as many management positions or things like this, like systemic things that exist, I think we can take a moment to step back and think about like our own affinity bias for things mm-hmm. and say like, you know, how do we make that better for people? One of the suggestions that was in this article, I think it was a Business Insider article, was that we look at resumes, not we, but we should look at resumes with no name. Mm-hmm. You just look at the credentials of the person, you make the judgment off of that. And then become aware of your own things. Like, I mean, I spend a lot of time in my life skateboarding, right? Or I do Muay Thai or whatever this is. I play a lot of video games. Mm-hmm. Someone walks in the room, two people walk in the room and, you know, they have similar qualifications and one like person skates or, you know, plays video games or mm-hmm. does Muay Thai, God forbid all three. Mm-hmm. How does that affect me, right? Or maybe they're less qualified than the other person, but I'm like, oh man, but I really like them because they know this, this, and this. They can talk about Dark Souls for hours.
Yeah.
I think like finding ways for like all of us to think about that stuff is important. And I'll leave one. I'll put one more thing in here, and then I'll leave on this.
Sure.
You know, there was a Scientific American study that went on, I think, in 2014, where they were looking at diversity in teams, right? Like teams that were made up of people with diverse backgrounds. And they found that those teams do better work, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we've got to consider. You know, there's the part of affinity bias, and then there's the part of diversity in teams. Like getting a team together that's where everybody's the same doesn't really help. Like it's actually not that helpful. Are you going to not? I mean, that's not. And it's not saying that every single person you shouldn't hire anyone like you. Like that's. Let's not be extreme, but be conscious of it. Yeah. You know, it's important for us, and I think it's important for our industry. And you know, it's something that we can maybe lead in.
Dude, Drew, you're quite an individual to use this time to actually talk about social awareness issues and industry issues. Most people are like, yeah, so, you know, got this game coming out. So I just want to
have this game coming out. Yeah.
There we go. There we go. Hard for the course now.
It's called affinity bias.
Called affinity bias. Really interesting. It's just a series of interviews that you have to do.
Well, guys, it's kind of cool. I'm feeling all right. My name is Larry Charles. I'm saying good night.
Yes, this is Brandon Pham. Thanks for joining us this week. See you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.